Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Salmon are resilient fish. They start their lives in fresh water. The young fish brave any number of predators to eventually journey out to the ocean. After a few years, the survivors swim back upstream to their birthplace to procreate and die. For the tribes that live around salmon, the fish, and their life cycle are an integral part of culture and existence. Today we'll hear about the significance of salmon for some tribes and the ongoing efforts to protect them. That's after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native people and their allies marched in Washington, D.C. Friday morning to raise awareness of environmental issues and Native rights. The Standing Rock Sioux tribe and grassroots leaders are calling on President Trump and his administration to meet with them and listen to their concerns, including about the Dakota Access Pipeline. The day's events also include speeches by tribal leaders, politicians, activists, and musicians. A Sixth Circuit court judge heard oral arguments about the Keystone XL pipeline this week in South Dakota. Opponents filed an appeal after the State Public Utilities Commission gave the go-ahead for the project. They claim the commission did not do its job to ensure TransCanada can build a safe pipeline. But the regulators and company say the outcome followed state law. Victoria Wicks has more.
Inside the Hughes County Courthouse, lawyers do the talking. There are no witnesses called. Judge John Brown hears oral arguments after having reviewed briefs and exhibits. Outside the courthouse, before the hearing begins, opponents come together for a few speeches and prayers. Here, tribal members are in the majority. One of them is Brandon Sazu, the chairman of the Crow Creek tribe. He says he went to North Dakota to protest the Dakota Access Pipeline and was arrested. He's still facing charges there. In jail, he met a journalist who had also been arrested. Sazu says he's committed to relying on tenets of democracy rather than violence.
Yeah, we don't use bullets. I mean, the only ones who use bullets are the police or all the military people. I mean, we use our voices, we use our hearts, we use the Constitution of the United States, the freedom of speech, the right to assemble.
Sazu is emphatic that treaties grant First People certain rights over land, even if that land has disappeared from shrinking reservations.
First and foremost, the supreme law of the land is the treaties. The government forced those treaties upon us. So we rely on those treaties. We follow those treaties. It's the government that doesn't follow those treaties.
Among those claimed rights are clean drinking water and preservation of burial sites, artifacts, and traditional and sacred places, which tribes say are threatened by the Keystone XL pipeline. The judge will issue a decision at a later date. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks, reporting from Pierre, South Dakota.
Wisconsin's Menominee Tribe of Indians has filed a case in Michigan to stop a proposed mine on ancestral land. Wisconsin Public Radio's Patty Murray reports.
Aquila Resources wants to mine for gold and possibly zinc or copper at a site near Stevenson, Michigan. The proposed Back 40 mine site is in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, just across the border from Wisconsin. It's on ancestral land ceded by the Menominee Tribe of Indians in 1836. Tribal Chair Gary Besaw says there are culturally significant burial mounds and garden beds on or near the mine site that he fears will be disturbed.
We're asking that they not mine in this area for some of the ecological reasons until it can be done in a process that does not put the environment at the risk it does. And we also ask that they not destroy the burial mounds in those ancestral areas.
The mining permit has been approved by Michigan, but air and water quality permits are yet to be. Hal Fitch oversees mining permits for the Michigan Division of Environmental Quality. He says people from the department have met with tribal officials and have held a series of public hearings on the proposed mine. Fitch says state archaeologists have also looked at the land.
I think there's some mound sites, some garden sites and so forth, and maybe some burial sites. Those, the actual pertinent features there were outside of the area that's proposed to be mined.
There's no timeline as to when the Menominee's contested case will be heard. For National Native News, Patty Murray.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Bears Ears National Monument, created to honor tribes and protect traditional access. You can tell President Trump to honor tribes and protect Bears Ears at protectbearsears.org.
Support by the Fred Jones Jr. Museum of Art at the University of Oklahoma. Photosynthesis. New photographs by Navajo Will Wilson plus early works by Edward Curtis. Photosynthesis through April 2nd. Info at fjjma.ou.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. For some of our Native nations, salmon is so much more than the pinkish-orange fillets wrapped in plastic at the grocery store. Salmon run through coastal areas and rivers on ancestral homelands. And these fish are essential to the existence of many tribal communities. And salmon are even part of some Native nations' creation stories. So they're pretty important, as you can hear. At the same time, as we'll hear about today, one strong runs of salmon are now being threatened in some places because of pollution, habitat destruction, and overfishing. Today, we'll learn about the salmon and the importance they have for the Yurok in California, the Inupiaq in Alaska, and the Yakima in Washington. And if you're from a salmon tribe, give us a call and share what salmon mean to you. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And now to start us off, joining us from Southern Oregon is Amy Cordalis. She is the general counsel for the Yurok tribe, and she is a fisherwoman. Amy is Yurok, and it is our pleasure to welcome her to the hour. Amy, thank you for being with us.
Sienna Coy, good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Amy, when you think of salmon, I'm sure there's a lot that runs through your mind. Tell me a little bit about what salmon means to your community there in Yurok.
So salmon is everything. And when we say that, we mean that from the bottom of our hearts. It's often said in our communities that if the salmon go away, so will the Yurok people. And that's in large part because, as you mentioned earlier, salmon runs really through our creation stories up into how we run our modern tribal government. Everything that we do as Yurok people in some way involves salmon. Our children are raised learning how to catch salmon, how to prepare salmon, how to smoke salmon. And in modern times, our children are raised even learning how to advocate for salmon, how to protect salmon. And we're taught to, never waste salmon, never take more than what we need to provide for our families and our livelihood. And, that kind of forms everything that we do. And in our modern tribal government, the Yurok tribe devotes the most of its financial resources to its fisheries department. Much of my work as general counsel for the tribe involves advocating for salmon in, court cases, legislative venues, and through settlement agreements. So we really, put our money where our hearts and our culture is in our modern tribal government. So it's just, salmon is everything to us. And I can't tell you how much I personally enjoy catching it and being on the river. And I've got more than a few good salmon catching stories, which maybe we can share at a later date.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get to that in this hour. And truly, as you just shared, salmon is everything. And folks, if you concur with that, give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Give us your tribe's perspective and why you are connected to the salmon. What were you taught growing up? What did you learn when you were an adult?
1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Amy, I don't know if it's appropriate to share on air or if this is the proper season to talk about creation stories, but is there anything you can share about that story or maybe even the major lesson we learn by understanding that salmon was there in creation according to the Yurok?
Yeah, no, I could share a part of the creation story. So what we're taught is that the Creator made Yurok country, and our Aboriginal territory is in the very northern corner of California, and it stretches from the mouth of the Klamath River at the Pacific Ocean and up the Klamath River about 50 miles, and then the coastal territory there in Northern California also. And what we're taught is that the Creator made the land, made the water, made the animals and the fish, including the salmon, and then made the humans, and told us that as long as we lived in a balance with the natural environment, as long as we took care, as long as we were proper stewards of the natural environment, and when it comes to fish, the Creator said, as long as you don't take too much, the earth and this land and these fish will always provide for you, and you will always have enough food, and you will always be safe and healthy. And what we take from that is really a lesson of what I think this modern culture calls sustainability. As long as we live in a sustainable manner, as long as we're harvesting, allowing escapement of fish, as long as we're being a steward of the land, keeping the water clean, keeping the habitat productive, that the salmon will continue to provide for us. And so that's why, as Yurok people, the lesson we learn is sustainability. And also, we take that role of sustainability and what came from our creation story, and also the great privilege we have of being from the Klamath River. It's really a responsibility. You know, it's not just a right, it's a responsibility to harvest and to manage and to protect. And so that's what we do as Yurok people.
And with that said, Amy, I have the understanding that a lot of tribes take this view when it comes to making sure the salmon are safe or that the waterways are clean for them. And tribes do a lot of work and have a lot of good thoughts so that all of this comes into play. But when we look at the numbers, when we look at the cycles of the water, there's challenges. And there are challenges that your tribe knows, too. Understand you're currently in a time of historic lows for the salmon, and just hearing how important it is to keep, these beings safe and sacred.
Yeah.
That sounds like a big challenge. Anything you want to share about that and what you take from it, just even given the lessons of your culture?
How much time do we have?
There's
so much to say about all of that. To try to sum it up. So it's devastating. We are in a time where just even today, this morning, I was on the phone with one of the tribe's biologists, and we're getting word that our allocation to harvest salmon this year is going to be under 1,000 fish. That is the lowest, by far, allocation that we have ever received. Just to give you some context, the numbers of the allocation usually range, somewhere between 100,000 to 20,000. Last year we received the second smallest allocation we had gotten in history, and that was just under 6,000 fish. So to get something less than 1,000 fish is devastating to us on so many levels. But what it means too is that the reason we're getting such a small allocation is because the total run So all of the run that's coming through the Klamath River is decimated. And that affects us, but it also affects all of the ocean commercial fishermen in southern Oregon and northern California, who also are dependent upon that same run of fish. So you know, the important thing to know is that it's not just us, it's everybody who relies on salmon are suffering here.
What are the reasons for that, Amy?
The reasons are, I'm going to start with the big and then go to the small. So the big issue here, why we're having such a small run and why our runs are decimated generally, is that really, the past, 200 to 150 years of land use and water management in the Klamath Basin as a whole and in the, the ocean have weighed heavily in favor of agriculture, of power, of basically, different types of economic activities that extract or pollute. And because they have extracted and polluted, and what I mean by extract is really diverting water, they have severely compromised salmon habitat. And so even though our runs are resilient, they can only take so much. So that's the big picture. The small picture is that on our river, one of our fish, the coho salmon, are already listed under the Endangered Species Act. And in the last, it was actually 2014 and 2015, we had clear violations of the Endangered Species Act, where what was happening is that water quality conditions were so bad on the river, and I'll get into why they were, what they call the incidental take permit was exceeded. How it was exceeded was that 80 to 90% of the baby salmon were infected with a disease called C. Shasta. The mortality rates of the fish that get these diseases is almost twofold. It's basically, if you get the disease, then you die. So we had in 2014 and 2015, 80 to 90% of our baby runs, so the baby salmon, die. And now we're seeing that run return to our river. And that's why the numbers are so low. So that's the specifics. In addition to that, one of the reasons why the disease rates were so high is because of the dams in the Klamath River. There are six dams in the Klamath River. They block 200 miles of spawning habitat. They were not built with fish ladders. So you have, and this is just a huge tragedy, I think. The Klamath River was once the third largest salmon-producing river in the entire Pacific area. And you had dams built with no fish ladders. And so now we're at a place where the dams are blocking salmon habitat, they're blocking access to spawning grounds. They're creating terrible water quality conditions. They're basically creating these spawning grounds for C. shasta and then also toxic algae blooms. The water quality there is so bad that literally toxic algae blooms every single year. And then that toxic algae is a food source for the little polychaetes that are associated with the C. shasta disease that is killing all the baby salmon. So all of this to say is we have these dams that are causing really terrible water quality conditions.
Man, Amy, you really know your salmon. And it's interesting that what you're sharing, a challenge to healthy salmon and numbers that your ancestors were used to, comes from changing the environment or development. And so I can only imagine how it compromises tradition too. And folks, when you're hearing about the importance of salmon and the challenges that they face, what do you think about this? Have you heard any reports on anything that Amy just shared? Give us a ring. What are your thoughts on this? 1-800-996-2848. So clearly the salmon are challenged, Amy. When the salmon are challenged, how is culture challenged?
Culture has the potential of being completely devastated. It's hard to be articulate about this because it's so painful to think about. One of the examples is, so Yurok people traditionally ate a lot of salmon. That's what we did. And of course, salmon is a really healthy food source. And so our people were able to stay healthy through that. Because of the toxic algae blooms, my grandmother, for example, will not eat salmon from the Klamath River. And that is devastating to me that one of our elders, you know, and she's not the only one, so you could say that, you know, a lot of our elders don't feel safe consuming the salmon. Culturally, beyond that, we are a fishing people. And every year, what we have done is gone to the river, gathered in our fishing camps, and harvested salmon. That is just what we do. And even in modern times, we'll spend, you know, three weeks camped out as a family in the fish camp harvesting salmon. And you know, it's interesting because when August comes, the end of August, that's when the big run comes in now. And, you know, a lot of times we're used to staying up late and catching fish. And so if I'm not on the river catching fish in August, a lot of times I just can't sleep because I'm ready to be out there catching fish and up all hours of the night doing that. And so if we don't, if the fish aren't there, you know, for example, like with this coming August, if the fish aren't there, then we don't have that opportunity to come together as a community, as a tribe and be on the river, be in our traditional fishing holes, together harvesting salmon. And that's, that is just, it's disrupting and a culture and a way of life that has existed since time immemorial. And that's just, you know, one example. The other thing is our ceremonies. We, you know, salmon is celebrated, and salmon is a main part of our of when we get together for ceremony. And if we don't have that salmon, then it's going to also be incredibly disruptive to those ceremonial processes. So. Yeah, not good.
And folks, what about you? When the salmon are challenged, how is culture challenged? I know there's a lot of folks who can answer that question in our listening audience. Call in, tell us a little bit about it. 1-800-996-2848. Elders, if you're out there, if you grew up knowing a salmon run that's far different than what you're seeing today, call in and tell us about that too. 1-800-996-2848. Is the number. Let's go ahead and take a call. We're going to hear from Patty in Cass Lake, Minnesota, listening on KOJB Radio. Patty, thank you for reaching out. Go ahead. You're on air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm from Washington State. I'm a member of the Kalit tribe and the Chinook tribe. And one thing different between our people is, you know, we never, ever fish when the salmon are spawning and going upstream. We only fish for deep sea salmon. That's a little bit of a difference. I guess I was always raised, you know, of course, we have ceremony too, where we take all of our bones and put it back in the ocean. We believe that, you know, the salmon will come back to us always. And, you know, I guess in California, also in Sacramento, I know they fish a lot when the salmon are spawning going up the American River. And I don't know if that's a good thing for the salmon, maybe not to be allowed to spawn. I do believe that, you know, the salmon are going to disappear if we don't make changes. And that's all I wanted to say.
All right, Patty, thank you for your call there in Cass Lake, Minnesota. And you know, when we do shows like this, it's always great to hear how different tribal nations connect or what they were taught on how to take care of the land, as well as the beings that are on that land, and in this case, salmon. I think we learn a lot and appreciate your call there in Cass Lake, Patty, somebody who connects to Washington salmon. How do you connect to salmon? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Amy, anything you want to share?
Well, just that, you know, we're doing a lot to try to heal things. And so, you know, I've laid out the problems, and there is a sort of shining rainbow that gives us hope that we're going to be on the mend. So the tribe has partnered with the states of Oregon and California, Pacific Corps, and environmental groups and some other tribes to reach a settlement agreement that will, if everything goes as planned, result in dam removal by 2020. And that for us is huge because, as I described earlier, the dams are really causing huge problems to the fish, and removing the dams will be a major step in making sure that they heal and that they are restored. And so we're really happy about that work. We're happy about our partnerships with the states. And we've also been successful in a few court cases recently, one related to the violations of the Endangered Species Act that I was talking about previously. But the result of that lawsuit and then another lawsuit is that more water will come down the river for salmon purposes to flush out those diseases that I was talking about. And so we're hopeful that these agreements, the court cases, will lead to a healthy, productive environment where we can restore salmon.
All right. Thank you for that. And folks, there is a Yurok perspective on salmon, including cultural connections. After the break, we're going to hear a little bit how the Inupiaq connect to salmon, as well as the Yakima Nation. And we know there are other tribal nations that find salmon as an important part of their life. Share a little bit of your culture. Tell us what those connections are. We look forward to your calls. And again, 1-800-996-2848 is the number, or you can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Make your comments there, or even on Facebook. And if you are finding this in our archives, you can also comment directly on our website or send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. We look forward to your voice. Making changes in your life can be rewarding, but for some, it can also be terrifying. And confronting change can be especially difficult during times of uncertainty. What makes us so afraid of change? Can we rely on our communities and traditions to feel solid about change? Tell us on the next Native America Calling.
Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thanks for tuning in today. Next week, we have a great number of shows lined up, and as you heard during the break on Monday, we are talking about facing fear during changing times. And on Tuesday, we'll be discussing what the proposed replacement for the Affordable Care Act might mean for Native America. That's how we're starting off the week. Visit our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, to get the full lineup and to sign up for our newsletter, where each week you are told what is coming up. And now back to our discussion on salmon. And there are several different types of Pacific salmon. They include sockeye, silver, Chinook, and pink. And are some of those your favorite salmon to bite into? Or maybe they are there and they have taught you a lesson about your culture, maybe even your language. You can talk about that too. All are welcome. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And as we heard earlier, and we know in other parts, salmon are in danger. And in some areas, they are plentiful. But if you got something you'd like to share, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And there are some folks who do want to share. They're on the line right now. Let's go to our call lines. We're going to say hello to Dustin in Spokane, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. Dustin, thank you for calling, and go ahead. You're on air.
Good morning. I just wanted to call today and talk to the listeners really briefly about one of the most powerful salmon conservation tools that I've personally experienced. I'm a fly fisherman, and through fly fishing, I've had the opportunity to interact with a whole lot of wild and native salmon throughout the Northwest. And one of the things that I've seen be extremely powerful is just having a human interaction with a salmon. You know, I've taken out my family and children to go watch salmon spawning, and it's an experience that once you see, you won't forget it, and it's super powerful. You know, you have that emotional connection with the fish, and it helps you understand the journey they make and how amazing they really are. And that's a great tool for conservation, you know, is having people who are emotionally passionate about the fish and acting for their benefit, you know, throughout their life. And so if you ever get a chance to go and witness salmon firsthand, I highly encourage you to take that opportunity. It'll be something that you never forget.
Dustin, thanks for sharing there in Spokane. We're going to go now to Kathy in Takotna, Alaska, tuned in on KSKO. Kathy, go ahead and share.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I must say I was kind of disappointed that the topic today wasn't about the march in Washington today, but after listening to your speaker talk about the dams that are destroying the salmon spawning grounds, it just kind of struck me how both really important topics are about water and how it was and is being destroyed, and how important it is that we all protect water. So also I would just like to give a huge shout out to those marching in Washington today and say that those of us that couldn't attend were certainly there in spirit. Thank you.
All right, Kathy, thank you for your call. And you know what? Earlier, before the show, I was watching some of the people at the podium, and a Quinault leader stepped to the podium. And the way she described the need to protect the land was important. And when I think of Quinault, I definitely think of salmon and their connections to the water and to the land. And I think it does connect a lot, Kathy. A lot of what we're talking about is what they're talking about at the podium right now in Washington, D.C., about honoring our Mother Earth. So those connections are there. And Kathy, I'm glad you brought it up in this program. And folks, if there's more you want to say on the march, you can always reach out to us. We look forward to hearing your thoughts on that. And you can always send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Kathy, thank you for your call there in Takotna. And we learned a little bit about the Yurok connection to salmon. It's time to hear about the Inupiaq connection. We're going to go to Nome, Alaska for it, and we're going to say hello to Marjorie Tabon. She is a graduate student and the world record holder for traditional fish cutting at the World Eskimo Indian Olympics. She is also a leader in her community and has worked with many folks to create more understanding of all of her tribal nations as well as her Inupiaq nation. It's our pleasure to welcome her back to the program. Marjorie, thank you for being with us. And when we talk about Inupiaq and salmon, what is it we're really talking about?
Thank you for having me on the show. Everything is interrelated when you're talking about salmon and water. When we talk about our culture and how we live, our well-being, our health, it's all affected. I come from the coast in northern Alaska, in Nome, and we have a fish camp every year that we go to in the summertime. And it's during that time where our family, not just our family, but also friends and community members can get together, work together, and subsist for our families and our communities, for the elders, and harvest the salmon. And up here, we have actually five different salmon. So we have pinks, we have chums, we have chinooks, silvers, and pink humpies, or sockeyes. So we have a vast majority of salmon. So we also are fortunate enough to have an abundance of salmon up north, but I can't speak for all of Alaska since Alaska is such a huge state. In other areas, you know, the salmon run has been devastated, more specifically the king salmon run down in the Yukon area. So, you know, when we think about salmon, it's not just a fish that could feed us and provide us vitamins and sustenance. It's also a fish that can provide us health and wellness, spiritually, mentally, and physically, because we're able to be with our families, we're able to work hard and be healthy outside, and then also having that connection to the land, like that caller was talking about, is that deep connection to the land is so very powerful, and it heals all. And so that's something that's really important. And up here in Alaska, salmon is a huge controversial topic. It is a huge topic that we talk about, that we've been talking about for years and years and years.
And Marjorie, what brings the controversy?
There's many different controversial topics. One that has to do with regulation, right? So when regulation is put on us, we have to abide by those, and that when we can fish for salmon, and when we can't. There's controversies on who can get the salmon. So we also have competitors like commercial salmon fisheries that happen here. And there's subsistence, there's sports fisheries. So we have a wide range of people who are coming here, and we have an abundance of salmon, but the regulations and the way in which that we harvest them and who gets the majority or whatever is not equal. It's not equitable to the people who rely on this fish, who have relied on this fish since generations and generations ago. So, you know, that's something that's been in the news the last decade, especially with the king salmon run down in the Yukon area. And so those are the controversial topics. too.
And Marjorie, you mentioned fish camp. I know a lot goes on at fish camp, a lot of laughter, a lot of learning, and a lot of keeping culture alive. Tell us how salmon fit into that.
Yeah, you know, we're a living culture where every year we're going and we're as a family, as a community, and we're living together and we're thriving with the environment. And, you know, salmon is a part of that. You know, there's also, we pick greens, we pick berries, we hunt for other animals, you know, and salmon is just a part of this beautiful process of our life and our cycle. And so it's something that we can't compartmentalize it. It's all interrelated, just how I began talking. It's, you know, part of who we are. And now it's winter time and the salmon aren't running, but I still am fortunate enough to be able to go into the freezer, pull out a piece of salmon, dried salmon, and eat that and feel that, and also know that we worked really hard for this food, and this food is coming from love, and I'm ingesting it. And so that's something that's really important, too, because it's not just during the summer we enjoy salmon. It's year-round, and it's not just us. It's our community members when we bring the salmon to the potlucks and enjoy them with other people. You know, food, enjoying food together is so important to our connections with each other, too.
Yeah, and Marjorie, and I'm sure for people who even travel away or haven't been home in a while, when they get some of that salmon, it takes them right back, and those connections and the stories that come out, even if it's just a funny story of grandma opening a jar of salmon, her tricks to get those jars open. If there's anything you'd like to share about your connection to salmon, we'd love to hear about it. Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Marjorie, you're known for a lot of things in your community and across Native America. And right now you have a world record title. It may be a little different than what people might know, but something fun about the way you step to fish and slice it up. Tell us about your world record.
Yeah, so at the World Eskimo Indian Olympics that is held every year, the third weekend of July in Fairbanks, there's a competition, among others, that's called the Fish Cutting Contest. And what that is you have a full salmon, unfilleted, ungutted, and you have your ulu, which is our traditional style of knife. It's called an ulu. And the competition is to fillet that fish and prepare it just as you would to hang up and dry for the winter. And you needed to do that. You need to do that the fastest. So that includes cutting the head, filleting out the back bones, and then splitting the meat. And just as you would, like our ancestors did long time ago, and then holding it up, getting ready to hang it to dry. And so I did that. I broke my record last year at 29.9 seconds, I think, was the title. But, you know, it's really about, it's a game that kind of just shows your skills. It's also a game that you know, as a woman, you know, being able to process fish fast is a skill that is admired. So it's like, it's something that you want to have good qualities, you know, as a person of the North. And one of the good qualities is being salmon quickly, because when we set a net out for salmon, we can get hundreds of salmon, and we need to be able to process it right away. We can't just let it sit there. So the values of hard work come into play here as well. And so we take care of the fish right away, and sometimes we'll be cutting for hours and hours, and being able to be quick with an ulu is important. So that's part of the... But, you know, another thing I want to acknowledge is that, you know, I'm there at the competition. I'm able to be timed, but I guarantee you there are faster people out there. There's faster elders. There's faster. So I, by no means, I'm very humbled by that title. But, you know, there's a lot of quick people out there. And you know, it's not just me, right? My ulu has to be sharp. So the person who sharpens my ulu also needs to be credited. And this person who catches the fish needs to be credited. And the person who taught me, my mother taught me how to fillet salmon at a young age, so it's all community and all connected, you know, there. So I got to credit everybody else who came in before me and also acknowledge the people who taught me.
And right about now, I want to hear from an elder who maybe even timed themselves and want to talk about that. But and Marjorie, when you said your time, I'm wondering how many people were doing the math in their head. If we had Marjorie on the scene, we could have this many salmon cut in an hour. And now you're going to get calls to go to different fish camps. Marjorie, it's great to hear this side of things. And folks, if you'd like to talk to her, maybe you have learned something about salmon because of her teachings or just having a great conversation, call in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Well, Marjorie, I'm going to introduce you to a Yakima side of salmon. We're going to go to Toppenish, Washington to say hello to Emily Washings, and she is a public relations specialist for the Yakima Nation Fisheries. She's also a member of the Yakima Nation. Welcome to the hour, Emily.
Hello.
Hi, Emily.
It's great to be here.
Especially talking about salmon, right?
Yes.
And Emily, you know, we got a little bit of perspective from Marjorie about Inupiaq connections. I also heard about Yurok connections. What would you like people to know about the way the Yakima Nation connects to salmon?
Well, with the Yakima Nation, I think my earliest memory was sitting at the ceremonial table waiting for the water to be poured, and then it followed with the different foods that we eat. And the first of those foods that's put on the table is salmon, followed by the meat and the roots and the berries. And then the meal is always completed with water. And I, as a kid, we would eat this food. We would hear our stories. We would hear our policy decisions, which I didn't understand at the time why we were listening and learning about the treaty at 4 years old. But I realize now that at that age, they were teaching us that it was our responsibility to speak for the resources that cannot speak for themselves. And this responsibility stems from our creation stories in which the resources were alerted that there's going to be a new people coming and that these resources were going to sacrifice their lives to make ours stronger. So it is in that way and in that we often refer to that as our first agreement or our first treaty is always with the resources.
And Emily, growing up in a community like that, tell me about how it truly does bring a community together, this kind of knowledge and making sure that you are protecting the salmon.
Right. So I kind of just want to take it to an example of, we have these, you know, historical numbers that would come through that we don't have the same amount, obviously, that's salmon that's coming through. But with that came a lot of trade. It came a lot of networking amongst different tribes, amongst each other. And we lose out on that aspect as we lose the salmon. So my family takes a concerted effort with other families to try to continue the trade aspect of that. So, for example, last week, we traded moccasins for canned salmon with somebody that, you know, was in the upper Columbia River. And it was just that kind of aspect and that kind of connection that I want to show my three kids who, you know, I have three kids under seven, that we still have this network, we still have this value of fish, and there's still a trade value of it. And hopefully one day they will be able to go and catch dinner. Like, you know, I have a one-year-old son, and two generations ago, my father, his mother could tell him, oh, we need some fish. Can you go down and get some? Go check the fish trap or go out and get that food. And with the decrease of our salmon runs and decrease of our fish in their areas and the smaller streams and creeks, we've decreased our role of our youth in our communities. So they used to have a purpose and a direct purpose from going to the rivers. And now it's lessened and decreased. And we have to really take an effort to say, how are we going to make sure that this maintains in our communities? How are we going to make sure that the health of our people and this relationship with these resources can continue to be strong so that we are strong?
And I think it's important to hear that the health of the salmon also means the health of certain Native communities. And Emily, I know there are a lot of lessons, I'm sure, that the salmon have taught you over the years. What's something that you want everyone to know, a lesson that the salmon have taught you?
Well, I mean, along with the fact that we consider them a part of us and our brothers, there's also so this historical checks and balances that used to exist and the role of women. I mean, I love the fact that we've had three women talking about salmon, but there was a historical role of women with fishing also, you know, not only with just the processing and the cutting of it, but with weaving. We used to weave the nets and the material for our dip nets and for the nets that we would put in the water. And if there was a fisher that was overfishing or not fishing appropriately, the women would hold back the material. So we have this historical role and this historical checks and balance of women within this. And I've always tried to look at different images and explain that to our youth and say, you know, you might see this image or this picture of this man fishing with this net, but in that net and intertwined in that process is a woman.
And, you know, when we think about everything that's connected to gathering the salmon, there are a lot of people, and even to what we just heard from Marjorie talking about harvesting the salmon and thinking about her ulu and, you know, making sure it's sharp. Emily, when you think of all the people who have been involved over the generations, is there any tribute you'd like to pay to them for making sure that, you know, the salmon stay alive and that you are able to walk to your waters and see them or greet them?
Right. Well, historically, we have a story that talks about if we ever stop fishing our historical, usual, and accustomed places, when that time comes where we are united with the others on the other side, they will not be able to return and greet us. So going to these historical fishing sites and maintaining that practice is intertwined directly with our creation stories and with our afterlife religion. And that's not necessarily understood on the context of a lot of Western society where it's very individualistic aspects. We as community members and community-oriented people have very community-oriented religious beliefs, and a lot of that connects with our foods, and for us, particularly our salmon.
Very nice. And Emily, any final thoughts on salmon and its importance to who you are?
The final thoughts is that I think it's such a fascinating aspect and species, and I love a biology aspect of it as well. So the one thing that I would like to say is that fish communicate with their eyes. So when we've done fish releases into the water and we can see them swimming around, you can see them swimming in small circles and coming back and looking at each other and going out and checking the rest of the land and coming back and look at each other. And it's just fascinating to watch them communicate in that way. And I think that that's something that we've done as people since time immemorial, is to watch the resources and see how they're interacting with the world around them.
And, you know, sometimes we need those reminders to just go back and do some of these things, or even making sure that we're greeting them, you know, in the water. And when was the last time you did that? There's your grandma advice for you. Emily, thank you for that. And Marjorie, want to give you a moment too. Looks like we got time. Any final comments about salmon?
Yeah, the thing I think about is, you know, it's about building the strength of our communities and the foundation that's being put in place when we go out and harvest. It's something that's very deeply ingrained in our cultures, and also know that, you know, reciprocity and taking care of our salmon and our land is still very vital and important, and that includes being involved in policy, regulations, and legislature. And so I also want to acknowledge the water protectors down in D.C. Who are putting themselves out there to protect our people from all across the country. So thank you for allowing me to be on your show today.
Marjorie, great to hear from you. Let's bring back in our guest, Amy Cordalis, for final comments out of the Yurok Nation. Amy, anything you want to leave us with?
Well, I want to say thank you to Native American Calling for having me on this show and to the other speakers who I've learned so much from today. And as a final comment, I just want to acknowledge that, you know, all of us come from a long line of salmon people, people who love probably every aspect of salmon, people who fight for salmon, and you know, the late, great Billy Frank comes to mind, and all of the work that he did, and all of the people upon the Pacific Northwest coast, even up into Alaska. And you know, I'm a lawyer, so I kind of have to throw out the advocacy component here, but you know, we fight for protection of our salmon because it is absolutely at the core of who we are as Native people. And one of the lessons, and I appreciated the comment from the caller that pointed out that this is really about clean water. And in Native America today, we are at this, what I think is a very exciting place where we are creating new allies and new partnerships with people and organizations that are able to strengthen our advocacy and to improve and to make us stronger.
Wow, she was on a roll and getting us to a great point. But you know, there's a lot that can be said when we think about the advocacy that our tribal nations do, both on our leaders, on community members, and making sure that our cultures stay alive, that we are able to know these stories and even just have first-person accounts. We do appreciate that. And thank you as well, Amy, for bringing up Billy Frank Jr., the late Billy Frank Jr. He's the reason why we can talk about a lot of this and his work. We're going to revisit some of the work that he did, hopefully, coming up this spring and taking a look back at the fishing wars. So definitely sign up for our newsletter so that you know when we do schedule that program. Thanks again to everybody we heard, including our callers and our guests, Marjorie Tabone, Amy Cordalis, and Emily Washines. We're back on Monday with a show about adapting to changing times in our lives. Thanks to the Native America Calling crew, also National Native News, for providing all the great things that come to these airwaves. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. We're back on Monday.
Bonjour. Anishinaabe gayansigwa mazanayigas jidabayigesigwa winanandawiandwa. O da aba jitunawa mazanayigan nishwaswe jangaswe ningodwaswe nanan. Deba amawawa deba amazo wininiwan. Ganoj 1-800-318-2596 gema mawidishiwain healthcare.gov. Gaunda nagadeg the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
Support by the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate Tribes, Dakota Western Corporation, and SWO Plastics. Commercial strength trash bags from 3 to 65 gallons for industrial use by casinos, the IHS, and more. DakotaWesternCorp.com.
Yate, support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at SIABQ.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.